Sam's, what we do is, here, I'll show you what you do. Where will I put it? I'll give you a spot to look for it. You're not famous now, but I will give you credit, Sam. Now, this is for a project, so it's kind of only half credit. But a lot of times Christians will come in here and they'll, you know, just tell us about who we are, like over and over and over again, and they're like, they always get it wrong. And we find ourselves saying things like, how about you just come in and ask us questions? And if you just ask us questions, you know, maybe, then you'll learn how we are instead of assuming how we are. And even if it was under the guise of you having to do a project, it was nice that, you know, you stuck to that sort of routine of kind of asking a lot and just trying to learn from where we're coming from instead of thinking that you already know where we're coming from.
Yeah, and, yeah, instead of just, like, writing, like, a completely absurd paper about us. But,
And the times that you'll see that we're like, you know, you might be recording over the beginning of that right now.
Over the beginning of it?
What was the other one? What is the purpose of the Rational Response Squad is one of the questions, right?
Yeah, what exactly is the Rational Response Squad?
What exactly is the Rational Response Squad? Damn. Shit if I knew.
Yeah, and I referred him to the homepage and to the Irrational Precepts.
What do you mean, who thought of the... Okay. Well, okay, the background story is that Rook Hawkins and myself, Brian Sapient, decided to start it together. Ironically, a special man is in the room right now. Brian RS37 helped devise the name, the Rational Response Squad. I had initially seen a T-shirt on Alex Jones' website called... it's a shirt that said Tyranny Response Team. And it was like, you know, in the event of tyranny, you know, this was the response team. And so I had joked that, you know, I would like to have a group that sounded something like that. And Brian dropped in a chat room while I was on the phone with the infidel guy. And we were talking about things that we can do and activism and whatnot. And Brian drops the name Rational Response Squad. And I didn't even know who came up with the name. And then a week later, after we started using the name, Brian 37 said that was me in that chat room that night. So and then I'm Brian Sapient, and my best friend of like 7 years or something is Rook Hawkins, and he's the one that kind of forced me to do this with him. I would have rather waited like a year or two.
In all honesty, I think I came up with something rough, a rough draft of Rational Response Squad, but I don't think I came up with the final version. I think. My recollection is you like my initial thing, but Rational Response Squad was a
tweak. Yeah, now that I think about it, I think you might have come up with Rational Response Team at that point, if I remember correctly. And we just changed it to Squad.
Yeah, Sam, we're recording this for you.
Yes, best friends for 7 years. It's okay.
Yeah. You'll get all of this in an audio file.
Yeah, Sam, you'll want to get...
Don't stress too much.
You want to get Skype at skype.com, and we can transfer it to you.
Or we could upload it, too.
You can look up the name.
Does it
stand for Sleepy Surface
to
Air Missile?
That's the name you would want to look up. Anyway, go ahead. Drop those questions. We'll just keep answering.
They were going to be Led Zeppelin, but the name was taken. Yeah, no. What did the shirt say again? What?
It said, I think it was Tyranny Response Team, yeah.
I don't know. Well, this isn't going to be a very good paper if you don't even know what questions you want to ask us. I mean, here you've got the opportunity to actually speak directly to us, which is impressive. Most people don't write research papers on people that they can actually talk to. So,
here it is. I don't think I've ever dropped the link to this anywhere. There you go. That's like part of what helped get it all started. Check out that shirt.
I sure that would be funny.
I
Yeah, sure, Sam.
I think maybe the next question I would have if I was interviewing a group is what are their motivations? What's their mission statement?
Well, you know, I think more importantly is, are you really dealing with apologetics? Because if you're really dealing with apologetics, then, you know, the shirt that helped us create the name for our group is rather irrelevant to what you're trying to accomplish in your paper.
Yeah, you should be asking
completely different line of questions. But if you're asking for, like, the general history of us, then this is pertinent.
Yeah, like, so you want to write, like, a biography, or do you want to try to attack our positions on theism?
And now that I think about it, Sam, since we're being so kind to you and sending you the audio and everything, we would like it if you sent us the final version so we could see it.
Oh, yeah.
Have we always been atheists? No. We believe that the definition of atheist is outlined in the Oxford English Dictionary, means that everybody is born atheist. And we were born atheist and then indoctrinated into religion at three separate times. Kelly, you were religious as a child and then got away and then came back, or just went in at 20s?
My family was my dad was like the nominal Catholic, like he grew up in a Catholic family, but never really gave a shit. My mom never gave a shit. I mean, they went through the motions, like I was baptized. I went to Catholic school, but only because the education at the Catholic schools is generally better. And it wasn't until I was 21 or 22 that I converted, because like 6 years before that my mom had the equivalent of a nervous breakdown and found Jesus and then became a total fundy nut and, you know, essentially like manipulated me at a weak time in my life. And I bought into it for about 4 years and eventually got out of it. Thank Zeus. And due to the damage I believe it caused me and my mom and other people, I have the desire to help other people overcome their theistic delusions. What keeps us motivated? The fact that religion still exists. The fact that everyday people commit atrocities and start wars and think that they communicate with an invisible guy in the sky and, you know, want to make decisions that are going to affect everybody's lives based on what their invisible friend tells them keeps us motivated. Well, that too, seeing that we have an impact, but...
Back on the previous point, there's obviously a long history of religion with each one of us, and each one of us has a very different background. But the gist is that, yes, we were all religious for the bare minimum of 5 years apiece. I guess I was from the time that I was to understand God, which is about 3 or 4.
Is your level...
My mic was off. I started believing in God, you know, around the time I was 3 or 4, probably, and the same age that you probably picked it up, and then abandoned it at 21, but abandoned Christianity at, like, 13.
Yeah. Sam, you don't need to write it down. We're sending you the audio file.
Yeah, we will send you the file. Rook was going to Catholic school, and at 15, 16 years old, he... saw a sign that made him want to be a priest, and he thought it was actually like a calling from God, because it was a sign that it had like a priest collar on it and said, "Do you have what it takes?" And the light was shining in through a window on the sign in such a way where he thought like God was calling him, and you know, and internally he was like, "Yeah, I got what it takes," and he wanted to be a priest, so he studied for several years to become a priest, and it wasn't really until about 19-ish, something like that, that he abandoned religion altogether, or Christianity altogether.
Yeah, and while I was a Christian, I was, at least for the first 2 years before all the cognitive dissonance started to get to me, totally absorbed in the religion. you know, read the entire Bible. Like, that's the first thing I did as soon as I converted, is I took, like, 2 or 3 hours out of every morning to just sit down and read it, because my goal was to finish the whole Bible in a month. And after that, I dug into all kinds of apologetics. I mean, everything from, like, Josh McDowell's, like, The New Evidence That Demands a Verdict, which I don't know if any of you people have been unfortunate enough to see this book, but it's, like, a textbook. I mean, you're talking, like, a big-ass book that's about 900 pages long. I read, I mean, everything. Lee Strobel's bullshit. I mean, all that stuff. Did my parents get mad? Yeah, we've both had issues with our parents. My mom initially was devastated. She has since not only loosened up her own religious views, but actually kind of supports me in what I do in the sense that she wants me to be successful, even though she might not agree with it. But I don't know, my dad, I don't think he gives a shit either way, but I haven't talked to him in over a year, so I really wouldn't know. I do know that he watched me on Nightline.
Rook's parents are semi-supportive, father more so. In fact, father is an atheist now. Rook actually, it's very ironic. Rook's dad was a deist. While Rook was a Catholic wanting to be a priest, his dad...
Mr. Bowser, that was a great video clip.
His dad convinced him to abandon religion through argumentation.
Jesus Christ, this fucking mic is off again. Where did I start that point?
You're talking about Rook's parents.
Yeah, okay, Rook's parents, yeah, Rook's parents are mostly supportive. His father, more so than mom. Mom is still a Christian and very much in love with God and Jesus. Rook's dad, ironically, was a deist and helped sway Rook away from God through argumentation when he and his father basically debated for several hours one night. And ironically, about 2 months ago, Rook managed to get his dad to admit to being an atheist and no longer a deist, and Rook deconverted his father. So they have
they
both helped take each other away from religion or God belief at one point or another.
Yeah.
Because Rook became an atheist when the father argued in favor of deism. So in my background is that my mom is still a very, very fundamentalist Christian. She loves Jesus with all her heart, and I tell people all the time that I'm fighting in part because of the fact that my mother, I lost my mother to religion.
Yeah.
I cannot have a conversation with my mother that doesn't involve God. More so, it doesn't involve her invisible friendship with Jesus Christ, her best friend. Of course she prays for me, damn. She not only prays for me, she, you know, insults me and, you know, strawmans me.
And sends emails,
you know,
to Ray Comfort talking about how she prays for you.
Yeah, sends emails to Ray Comfort, giving her the skinny. Saying, you know, thank you for taking me. Thank you. She sent a letter to Ray Comfort. Thank you for becoming my son's friend. He really needs a good Christian in his life.
Yeah,
she went behind my back and, like, it was really weird. Like, I found out that my mom wrote to Ray Comfort through Ray Comfort.
Yeah, and my mom was actually at the debate and spoke to Ray Comfort. Yeah,
I can give you an example, and I'll tell you a story. Okay, I'll give you a story. This is the first time that all right, let's try to tell the story now. All right, when I was 19, I got a girl pregnant, and I talked to my father about it and told him that, you know, gotten a girl pregnant, and he said, well, you got to get an abortion. And I told the girl that I wanted her name was, I won't even give her name. I told the girl that, I wanted her to be able to make the decision that she wanted to make, without outside influence, but specifically just, scientific information and the information with how she felt, like, at heart, what made her happy and what her wishes were. And I told her that I would support them and whatever they were. And I really wanted, I didn't want my family to get involved, really, because I didn't even want to get involved in the decision. And obviously, I couldn't stop her family from getting involved in the decision. And mostly for them, their part, they wanted her to have the baby. My mother comes over to our house unannounced, unwelcome, already knowing that I do not like her religious beliefs, nor did I believe that they were anywhere near accurate. And she brings over the Bible. She knows that she knew what was going on, and she told us that Jesus loved us and that Jesus would hate for us to get an abortion, that it would be, like, you know, horrible, and that Jesus would be upset, and, you know, like, it was all about the Jesus, you know. And so this story didn't help me at all, obviously, because it would be like if I told you that the Snarf widget says you should eat, you know, 2 servings of rice a day. You know, it's like, well, that doesn't give me any help at all, because I don't think a Snarf widget exists, and so I'm not going to believe anything that a Snarf widget would say, you know. And that's kind of how I was being helped. And there's really many problems here with the way that my mother was operating. First of all, she was clearly ignorant to the fact that her religious beliefs were not going to help me, but also she was ignorant to the fact that teaching me about her real life story would have helped me more. And I'll tell you what her real life story is. I called my father and I told him that my mother had just come over unannounced, and that she had brought the Bible, and that she was arguing that abortion was the worst thing in the world, and that, you know, Jesus would freak out and yada yada yada. And my father tells me, a man who I have felt to never have told me a lie in my entire life, and he tells me, well, I don't know why your mom is saying that. She had several abortions before you were born. Now, you can first see the glaring hypocrisy, but second of all, you can recognize that had she come to me and told me the reality of the situation, the truth behind her situation, she would have given me a lot more help. She would have been able to come to me and said something like, I had several abortions before you were born, and it was the worst thing of my life. I regret it every day. And this real life experience of hers would have helped me a lot more than teaching me some religious stuff that didn't have any proof. And so, yeah, that's a lesson in religion right there. We ended up, I ended up having the child. He's the greatest thing in the world, and I love him very much. By the way, I think that's the first time that the child has ever heard the story, and I've always been worried what he would think when he heard it. And his reaction to hearing the story was awe, like awe in a cute way. He was happy to hear the end of the story. That's interesting. I'm glad to have that.
My mom's a Christian, and she had an abortion before I was born as well. Although I never really was in that position so much that I was like asking her for any advice on what to do. I've got 3 kids, but I don't know. And like for a long time I couldn't talk to my mom either, like before she converted me. Like every single conversation I had with her was all, you know, everything that was wrong in my life was because I needed Jesus. She would send me Bibles all the time and like just constantly, and it got to the point where I was like, listen, if you do not stop talking about Jesus, I can't talk to you. And her response to me was literally that, like, you know, kind of like what Jeremiah says in the Bible, like, you know, the words just, you know, burn their way out of his body, that he can't help it, and she can't stop talking about Jesus. And so she would sacrifice her relationship with her daughter because of Jesus. And I think that part of that is what kind of got me to the point where I like converted, because I was petrified. Like, my mom's the only relationship I have with anybody in my family, and I was afraid of that.
My mom had disowned me twice when I was younger, once at 12 and once at 16. This event occurred at 19 years old, and she called me up on the phone a day or two later. I said something like, you know, I don't want to hear this crap from you about, you know, abortion. You had several abortions before I was born. And she said, who told you that? Lose my name, lose my number, and don't ever call me again. And she hung up. And, you know, people know around here that if you ever say, why don't you just ban me from this place? We will. And if I've been disowned twice, and I basically have been disowned a third time by somebody who's telling me to lose my name and lose my number and don't ever talk to me again, I'm pretty much going to obey. And that's basically what happened. There have been like two emails and two phone calls in the last 10, 11 years since that incident. And other than that, I do not have a relationship with my mother. She also can't have a conversation without Jesus. She at one point, I mentioned something to her about a barbecue, or I was at a barbecue, and I think I was on the phone with her while a piece of chicken fell on the ground, and she, I forget what she said, but she somehow managed to correlate that to Jesus. And that was when I realized that I couldn't talk to her at all. You know, imagine, and for you, Sams, it might be hard to understand, but I mean, imagine if you had a friend that believed that there was a blue troll, you know, with him. And it wasn't a joke, you know, he really believed it. And every single conversation that you ever had with him had something to do with the blue troll. Like, everything correlated back to the blue troll. And it would just be weird to you, and it would be like, oh, this is like a waste of my time, and
well,
I don't want this in my life, and...
Sorry, I was just saying, not just that it's a waste of your time, but, like, it's offensive to have somebody constantly telling you that every problem in your life is based on the fact that you don't believe in the blue troll that he believes in. And, you know, well, all you need is the blue troll. The blue troll will fix all your problems. Well, guess what? The blue troll won't, and neither will fucking Jesus. Pillow pants! Yeah, that's the best.
Let's go back. He says, do you guys ever think back and think it was your parents' fault that you became atheists? You know, obviously, which direction you travel in life is always going to be directly related to how your parents raised you. And someone might say that, you know, I would have never stumbled on the internet or something like that if my dad didn't give me a computer at 16. You know what I mean? So, it depends what you call it. But I think you mean that, like,
because of, like, the excessive fundyism.
Right. And no. I believe that both of us, you know, left religion because we realized independently that it didn't have a logical foundation on its own. In other words, Kelly, her mother had nothing to do with it. I mean, in fact, her mother, if anything, it's our parents' fault that we became religious. It's our own fault that we got out of it. It's because we studied, because we researched, because we, you know, decided to not just trust what our parents and what our pastors and preachers had told us. And to look outside for more information, that we realized that it was wrong. And it wasn't like we were necessarily mad at them, although I think to some degree you can't help but be somewhat mad at a parent for lying to you. But then again, you realize that your parent has been lied to themselves, and that they're a victim of the same thing that you're a victim of, and which is, of course, the brainwashing process of religion. And so you can kind of alleviate some of that madness. But yeah, what's the other question here? Or do you have anything to add to that, huh?
Well, no, I was just going to point out that my deconversion story is kind of ironic in the fact that I used to argue for Christianity on message boards. Like, that's when I first started getting involved in, like, you know, like, internet message boards and stuff like that. And I was having a debate about intelligent design. I was not the young earth creationist type, but, you know, I had gotten, like, sucked in by, like, crap like Michael Behe and, like, irreducible complexity. And I was debating that issue, and I realized that my knowledge of evolution was insufficient to be able to properly counter it. So I started studying evolution. And when I realized that it was my ignorance that led me to believe that evolution was, you know, essentially impossible, I started researching other things about the Bible, because it's like, well, hell, if it's wrong about this, then what else is it wrong about? So then I moved on to, like, the historicity of Jesus and the development of mythologies and things like that. And, you know, it was like, I mean, I could tell you right now, I remember sitting at my computer, the exact website I was looking at, and it was like a light bulb just clicked in my head, like, wow, this is all bullshit. And it happened just like that. Boom.
Go ahead. Go on.
The cop in the room that said, my folks never pushed me into religion, but they still believe in God and don't understand why I don't. That's the cool thing about religion, if you want to call it cool, is that they don't even need to push it on you. You become indoctrinated just by being around it. It's a disease in that sense. You don't even have to want it. It's just if you're exposed to it at a young enough age, and then you have the people around you that don't know that it's bullshit also, you get infected also. It's contagious.
It's like the flood infection from Halo.
We're in the middle of a pandemic.
Getting back to Halo, as all things go, eventually.
Come on, I don't need it.
It's like 1 degree of Halo. It's fine, Sam. We're still recording everything, so we'll keep answering. You just keep dropping the questions, and we'll get you the tape.
Yeah.
You said something like, back on that old point, and pop another question in there, because we're pretty much beat these ones to death. But back on that, do you guys ever think that it was your parents' fault that you became atheist? Like, if they would have been more active in church, you would have been more religious. Brooke's mom, Kelly's mom, and my mom were all, isn't that weird? It was all the mothers.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that women, I mean, there's like a higher incidence of religiosity among women.
So, but all three of them were relatively active, and I think probably if I know the mothers well enough, I believe my mom was probably the worst. She was, you know, at church twice a week. The only people that she would hang out with were church, like, community groups. She would have Bible studies and, you know, that sort of thing. So, I mean, there was plenty of religion around me.
Yeah, well, yeah, my mom was like that for a while, you know, maybe the first, like, 3 years. As a matter of fact, my mom, for probably 2 or 3 years, never read any book other than the Bible. Like, and it doesn't matter how many times she read it, that was the only thing she would read. And used to do, I mean, all that kind of crap, you know, involved in every function at her church, doing all these kinds of Bible studies, you know, all kinds of shit. But she has definitely improved. Her mental illness has improved over time. She's less psychotic and obsessive compulsive now than she was then, which is a good thing, because if she was still the way she was then, I would not be able to have a relationship with her at all.
Well, the interesting thing is that she seems to recognize that religion is flawed and yet can't drop it. And ironically,
yeah,
she has a brain tumor that happens to exist in the portion of her brain that scientists have analyzed as the portion where religious thought comes from.
Yeah, they discovered that like years after she had this nervous breakdown and became a Christian, that she had a non-malignant tumor. It's called a meningioma, I think, or something. And it is in her temporal lobe. And that's one of, like, people with temporal lobe epilepsy are very prone to having very high levels of religiosity. So I didn't find that that unusual when they discovered it, and then it was exactly in that spot.
In other words, there's a chance that even though she might recognize that religion is flawed, she might never be able to abandon it.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's straight up
Because of a literal, you know, condition.
Yeah. I mean, she straight up told me after we had Richard Dawkins on the show, and she watched the interview, and she also listened to our entire Ergen Kaner debate, that she knows there's no rational basis for religion, but it's the only hope she has. And if it wasn't for religion, she would just kill herself.
My mom actually told me in a conversation after I had become an atheist that if I said to her something like, you know, Mom, all you got to do is research. You know, I promise you. I said, let's spend 10 hours together and research it, and I'll show you what I'm talking about. Yeah, you know what, maybe KT45, maybe we'll just upload this onto our server or something like that and let everybody download it. So she said, I told her that I could prove that, you know, her religion was, you know, definitely wrong. And she said, if you could do that, the only thing you would be doing is taking away everything that I have. And as soon as I heard those words, like, as much as I want to help my mom overcome religion, and as much as I know that in reality I'm not really taking away everything she has, I couldn't get over that moment and decided that I would not address her religious beliefs again. I just dropped it and just didn't talk to her. And it wasn't until she sent me a letter after she saw me on Nightline that that I actually attacked some of her shit. And it was ironic that back on that abortion issue, she thinks, or her understanding of the situation was, the reason why I was mad at her for not telling her the truth about the abortion was because she thought that I was grieving over my brother and sister that I would have had she not had the abortion. She was completely clueless to the fact that I didn't give a shit about that at all, and that all I cared about was the fact that my mother was a lying hypocrite.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, that's the thing, though. It's like they twist everything around in their own brains to fit into their belief.
I think it's imprudent to interject that the best reason to accept or reject anything is not necessarily emotional stories, which these may come across to this impressionable person as merely emotional, so we don't want them getting the wrong idea. Those are reasons, but they're not the core reason. To accept our wins. That's all there is for it. And Brian touched upon it earlier. Don't believe what your pastor says. Kelly also said the only thing that her mom ever read was the Bible. Okay? And that's not how you go about life. You would not read Shakespeare alone. You would not read Plato alone. And you should not read the Bible alone, and you should not just listen to a pastor or a cleric. But yeah, there you go, and you shouldn't read just Hustler magazine.
it's important. Reading is actually going on when somebody looks at Hustler magazine.
Well, here's actually the best sort of mentality I think on that is that, and it'll obviously keep you busy for an eternity. I think that you should research the position that you hold and the counterposition, and then once you research the counterposition, you should then research the counterposition to that, and consistently always research the opposite of what you believe so that you are aware of what the other side has to offer. And
yeah.
I think that's what we do. That's why we tend to know a lot about Christianity too, because we continue to research it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't like the emotional side of my relationship with my mom that led me to atheism. I mean, it was actual science and the fact that I realized that my education in certain areas was completely insufficient. But, you know, as far as, like, I mean, him asking questions like, well, would you blame it on your parents? You know, I mean, no. I blame Christianity on my mother. I blame the 4 years of my life that I wasted on Christianity, on my mother. And at first, I was really angry about that. I was just pissed off that I felt like I had been duped and conned and wasted all this time. But once I got involved with, like, Rational Response Squad and other, like, online, like, atheist forums, I realized that all of the knowledge that I already had of Christianity and of the Bible and of their arguments is actually beneficial to me now, because I can argue their points before they do.
Reiterates the question that Sam's asked, Mr. Sam Triple Z. So what do you think will happen when you die? What is the point to life? There is no point to life. The point to life is that you make your own point. The point to life for a musician is to play the guitar or whatever instrument they're playing.
Okay.
good to hear your voice there, John. I just want to mention something to get in on.
Sam's, I'm sorry, the answer to what will happen when you die?
Yeah, nothing.
I don't think we do. I think I'm hearing him through somebody else.
Yeah, no, Kiwis is there.
Oh, he's just low then. But I'm sorry, the answer is not very long and detailed and enlightening and beautiful as you would want it to be. Kelly's answer to that, what happens when you die, she would give a one-word answer, nothing. I would give you an analogy to help you understand better. If you tried to remember what life was like before you were conceived, before you reached conception, when you were just a sperm, and actually take it a step further back, what was life like for you right before you were a sperm, right before you were a moving critter? Whatever you remember about that time, which is likely nothing.
Well, definitely
that
nothing
is
before
what
when
death
you
is
were like a sperm.
That is exactly what death is like.
Yeah.
It's just like it was before you were born.
I think it's important to recognize the arrogance of that question also. What happens when you die? You die. That's the end.
Yeah, it makes you think that you're...
It's rather arrogant for people to believe that they are the chosen species that continues into... You know, an eternal existence with, the dictator in the sky.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kicking back to myself. That is the Sucksors. I definitely agree that it is completely arrogant to think that, you know, we're like the only intelligent life in the universe and that God created the entire universe just for us. I mean, it's not only arrogant, it's just blatantly idiotic to think that, especially when there's so much evidence to the contrary and there's no evidence for the opposing theory. So, you know, where does that lead you? I mean, like, any logical intellectual person is going to see that the ultimate result is that the universe was not created for us. We just happened to end up here.
Yeah, no, I think what Glenn is trying to say, I think to better expand on that point, is that, you ask the question, what happens when we die? But have you ever asked the question, what happens when a cockroach dies? Or what happens when an ant dies? Or what happens when a fly dies? And why is it that you think you're more important than them? Because you're smarter? Because in the grand scheme of things, we're not much different than them. If you look at the vast universe, we in fact share a lot in common with them. And in fact, through science, you can prove that we are related to those beings. So
shit, we're related to daisies.
Right. Exactly. Whereas you're taught that we're created in God's image. It might not be a very big deal for you to swat a fly. Kelly and I are similar in this regard. We tend to try to shoo flies out and, you know, like, get them outdoors. We, like, so they can live where they live, you know, because we don't think in some way that we're just better than them. Of course, we also eat seafood.
Well, they bought...
Brian also touched upon something... Genesis, it says, God let me make them in my image. But what most Christians don't know is that there's a much, much older text out of ancient Samaria during the Ugaritic text, which says virtually the same thing, except it's pluralistic, not monotheistic. And it says, let us make them in our image. Now, that was not Genesis. That was the polytheism of the Canaanites in the Ugaritic, which modern-day Iraq or Iran. That's where that was found, I guess. So my point is people don't even know the history of where the text comes from.
Well, I mean,
so, the last question though was if it's not by the way, the key word there, by the way, Sam's is Eucharitic texts, and you should look that up. Is he talking again? I can't hear.
I don't know. I have to turn it
if
down.
If you guys don't have Brent Keane or Kiwis Can Fly, Doc, please do that. They've been trying to interject.
Okay, well, the other thing is, if you guys, well, on, keep in mind, needed. Kelly and I are being interviewed for a paper here.
No, I
understand. Okay. Okay, thanks. So the question is, if it's not created, then how did it start? You would have to, Sam's, take your own logic a step further and say that if life required a creation and you think that all things require creators, then what created God? And it's a very simple question that is very hard to answer honestly without saying, wow, there must not be any logic to my thought process.
Yeah, it's an argument from ignorance. It's the same thing that has happened throughout all of history, and as our scientific knowledge has progressed, we've needed God for less and less things, you know? The Egyptians believed in the sun god Ra, drove his chariot of fire across the sky because they couldn't figure out why the sun moved across the sky. And so humans have this desire to fit everything into some kind of like rational framework and don't like not having certainty. So when there is uncertainty in a particular area, such as like, you know, abiogenesis or in the beginning of life, or, you know, the creation of the universe, they just make one up. So really, that's all we need God for anymore, because yeah. We know why the sun moves across the sky. We understand why tornadoes and earthquakes and things like that happen. So we don't need God for that, but we, you know, people still hold on to needing God for the creation of the universe, and I'm confident that someday science will understand more about this subject, and then we won't need God for that either.
Yeah, the points that you're seeing now about matter and in the beginning is that...
Okay, well, your use of the word designed is begging the question, because you're assuming that we were designed. You're muddying the waters to favor your own position, which is a logical fallacy. You can't do that. First, you have to prove that we were designed before you can imply that we would need a designer. So, you know, if you can't do that, then you can't make that assumption.
And we're throwing a lot at this kid. There's a name for that, and it's called that leads to infinite regress, which simply is an infinitely asking, well, what created that? Well, what created that before that? Well, what created that before that? Well, what created that before that? So as soon as you imply God, as soon as you say God, then somebody with a brain should say, well, what created that God? And what created that God? And what created that God? And that is, in simple terms, called infinite regress.
Yeah, but yeah, Sam's the anthropic principle is that the universe is fine-tuned for life. The universe is also fine-tuned for the creation of black holes, if you want to look at it like that. Maybe that was the purpose of the universe. The anthropic principle is nothing more than observing the fact that we live on this planet and we just are here. We are here because the conditions were ripe for life to be for life to emerge on this planet. That's still not evidence that some higher being specifically made it that way. It just is that way, and life occurred as a result.
Sam, you should look up the laws of thermodynamics. One of our most understood laws and most tested is the notion that there is always the same amount of matter and energy in the universe. Never any more, never any less. No matter what kind of test you conduct, you find that this is the same and verified over and over and over again, and nobody has ever shown it to be wrong. If that's true, then we have very good, good scientific and valid reasons to believe that the matter that makes up our universe has existed forever. So, when you say that everything that has a beginning has a cause, you would be negating matter from that argument. In other words, you don't have any reason to believe that matter needed a creator. Unless, of course, you believe blindly the dogma taught to you by parents, religious school teachers, and pastors and ministers.
Yeah, and the first cause argument, like, we already addressed that, you know, everything that has a beginning has a cause. Well, not only are you assuming that that cause was your particular God, you're also assuming that the universe had a beginning. The universe in its present form, you know, is a different story, but we don't know what it was like before the Big Bang. Okay, so what other irrational... we'll address Sam's question first, since he's the one who's writing the paper and started this whole conversation. What do I believe about miracles? I don't believe that there is any such thing as a miracle. I believe that everything has an infinite number of causes, an infinite number of possible combinations of things that led to a particular event, and I don't believe that anything miraculous has ever occurred, or more than likely will ever occur, based on the fact that just because you don't understand the cause of a thing doesn't mean it doesn't have a cause. It actually has an infinite number of causes that could go back to, you know, millions of years ago. And do we address other religion issues other than religion? Yes, we like to combat irrationality in all forms. So we also have a dislike of things like, you know, homeopathy or psychic healing or, I mean, a million other kinds of bad thinking.
This Ahmadinejad guy says the Holocaust never happened. People that think science is dogmatic. People that think that matter had a beginning. You know, and atheists are not above making logical errors as well.
We're only human. Everyone that's human makes errors, of course. We can only be human. To expect beyond, you know, human stuff is impossible. Perfection is not attainable. And what is perfection? Perfection is only, you know, held up to the imperfect, to gauge what something is perfect. And even then, perfection is still an opinion.
Yeah, well, I mean, perfect necessarily implies, like, some kind of purpose. Like, what is it perfect for? A thing could be perfect for a particular thing and not perfect for another thing. So true perfection can't possibly exist without knowing what a thing is perfect for. So, I mean, what is God perfect for? What's its purpose? And, like, do you understand that when you say something like perfection is God, that all you're doing is making a claim to the dogma to which you adhere, and that there is nothing to support that? And actually, if you read the entire Bible, there are lots of instances where God's supposed perfection fails. Like, you know, when he can't defeat the armies that had, you know, iron chariots. Or when God changes his mind because Abraham beseeches him to save his cousin Lot from, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, there are many times where God supposedly, you know, changes his mind. Well, if he was perfect, why would he need to change his mind and be swayed by somebody else's opinion, much less a mere mortal? Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, people use the word miracle in birth because it seems like a miracle that, like, all of a sudden this other living being just, like, pops out of a woman. It's, you know, not a thing that most people see every day, you know? And it's just, it's just them trying to say that, like, wow, that's really amazing and wonderful. But I think that most people understand where babies come from and how they're formed, and that it's not really a miracle.
The opposite of miracle, in fact, is the root of nature.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just about as miraculous as having sex. We're making a movie. Well, actually, a movie's being made about us. I don't know that we are making a movie. Yeah, Gabe, they're... actually, it's going to start this weekend, right?
Well, they've actually already filmed portions of it, but yeah, the filming that involves our end starts this weekend.
And they're going to be coming to stay with us after the conference, correct?
They are coming back to the house, and I guess, shameless plug again, if you want to see much of what's going on, we've already said this a couple times, but if you want to see much of what's going on with the movie, because it's a movie and you want people to, like, want to go see the movie or want to buy the movie, you don't want too much of the information out there ahead of time, this link on our website, the private webcam thing, will give you the ability to pay $30 to get into a private room where pretty much everything that we record for the movie, or that we can at least put on a webcam for the movie, will air to you guys Friday through Thursday. They will be at our house Monday through Thursday, and much of the time that they're at our house will be in the private room.
Yeah. Sam, do we think that the scripture in Mark doesn't mean that I'll go to hell, but that it's just an unforgivable sin? Well, according to the Bible, if you can't be forgiven of a sin, then you go to hell. Right? I mean, all people are evil and sinners, and you can get forgiveness for those sins by accepting Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. And that's the only way you can go to heaven. And, I mean, it clearly says in the Bible that the penalty for sin is death. And so I think that pretty much an unforgivable sin equals eternal damnation. Not that I believe in that, and that's not what the blasphemy challenge is about. We don't actually believe in a hell. We're making a statement that...
We don't believe in hell,
and we so much so don't believe in hell that we're willing to do what the Bible says is the only unforgivable sin, because there is no hell to go to, and we're not afraid of saying that.
Yeah, and I think that as you, after a conversation with us, you would at least be willing to admit, even though you probably disagree with us, that we're not necessarily dumb. We seem at least relatively intelligent and people who would probably not want to go to hell if there was one. So that would hopefully lend a little more weight to the fact that we're willing to risk this, you know, supposed soul in an effort really just to show you how easy it is to do and how sure we are that it doesn't exist.
Yeah. How do you know that Moses went to heaven, by the way? Are you going to use the transfiguration, you know, where Jesus, Moses, and was it Abraham or Elijah? I'm not remembering. Either way, all appeared on the mountain. Like, how do you know that Moses went to heaven? I mean, that's something that even Christians debate, you know, is did the righteous who died before Christ go to heaven? Righteous. What's the difference between good and evil? Is that what you're trying to ask? Because it says even. You give us props. Well, thank you. Yeah, well, what? Yeah, I guess first you would have to define good and define evil. You know, and then we can even get into some, like, fun, like, Socratic dialogue, you know, like Euthyphro's dilemma. Is what is good good because it's just good, or is what is good good because God says it's good? And then are the evil things that are recorded in the Bible also good because God, you know, said so?
Yeah, he's a Christian student who's doing a report for some sort of apologetics deal for what sounds to be like a Christian school. Is that accurate, Sam?
Yeah, but I knew a guy that was an atheist going to a Christian school because his parents beat him.
Yeah, I've heard those stories before, too.
Yeah, well, that's the way I was. I mean, I was atheist in a Catholic school. Actually,
that's how Sam's will be tomorrow.
Discrimination. Due to that, and I also went to a Jesuit university and studied theology for 2 years.
There you go. Is that KT-45? Is that Utopian there? Because we had a guy who just PayPal Man Without God. Anyway, you want we're good. I know you. I know you square up someday. Doesn't even have to be the first. What was the question? Oh, yeah, atheist at Christian college. We have a kid who left religion as a result of our debates with Ergen Kaner. He was a student at Liberty University Theological Seminary, you know, Jerry Falwell School, and he's on the staff there. He helps pay for his education through being a staff member there. He has 1 year left, and he decided that he would not tell them, and he would just stay. And continue his education as a atheist because it was easier just to continue school like that. And he actually didn't want to ever come on the show because he didn't want his parents to hear or his family to hear because he didn't want to hurt their feelings or anything like that. He had a hard time dealing with it. But funny thing is he writes me from time to time and tells me the shit that they're talking about us at Liberty University. He's like our own little personal spy on campus.
Mm-hmm.
But Sam's...
You don't need a spy on a campus like that because you already know what the arguments are. You already know everything about them.
Well, no, I don't. I mean, seriously,
well,
the one thing Yeah, the one thing I didn't know was when they apparently they've had many debates at Liberty University. And there was a certain buzz about the way that our discussion went down. That was different than all other discussions that this person had ever seen. After the debates that had happened in the past, they had whole classes built around these debates. After our debate, it was silence. Nobody said a thing. It was like the campus was stunned, apparently. I would have never known that. And in fact, it's actually hard to even believe that. even with somebody who I feel like I can trust giving me the information. Yeah. So what were you going to say, hon?
Oh, no, I was going to talk about how, like, Liberty University just last week organized an entire, like, a seminar where they brought in, I think, like, three people to talk specifically about us and the blasphemy challenge and other things like that, and didn't even alert us to it. So that kid was the one who told us that it was going down, and unfortunately none of us could travel to Virginia to attend and be able to show their stupidity in front of their entire student body again, because we're going to be in Virginia this weekend. So, convenient for them. But, you know, it's funny that those things happen and we wouldn't even know about it unless somebody told us.
Okay, yeah, you misunderstood the 13 years old for me. I wasn't a Christian anymore at 13, because I found it to be flawed. My pastor was, of course, a young earth creationist who told me that that dinosaurs lived at the same time as people, and that was like...
Look in Job, it's all there. What's the...
As much as that was a faulty argument and that not all Christians hold to that argument, for me, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, there were many. I mean, when I was six... I asked my Catholic, maybe I was seven or eight, I asked a teacher at a Catholic school why God knew that he was going to have to kill everybody, and he decided to make everybody like that anyway, and then flooded the world and killed everybody. And she slapped my hand with a ruler. And, I mean, it's like things like that and little issues like that. I mean, they slowly weigh on you. And then, of course, you know, it was like that particular story was the straw that broke the camel's back for me. And I just abandoned Christianity. But, of course, I still held to the belief in God because that was obvious to me, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew because my mom told me that atheists were all devil worshipping, you know, like baby eaters. And I'm not exaggerating her position. They're atheists are in a cult. They like blood. And they worship the devil. And that was what I was told. And I knew that I didn't worship the devil, so obviously I believed in God. And it took me until, you know, I basically believed in, like, some sort of God out there. And I would say, okay, well, I understand that, you know, we got here through evolution, so maybe God created life on Earth. And then I would, like, understand abiogenesis, and I would go, wait, maybe God created, like, the conditions so that life could evolve on Earth. Then it was like, wait, that could have occurred naturally, too. Well, maybe God created the Big Bang. And it finally got to a point where I was on a message board at 21 years old, and it was Jake at atheistnetwork.com that said to me, if you take it that far back and you have to keep explaining it away with God, he said, why are you putting this word God to describe what you don't understand? He says, you keep finding out more information. You keep learning that it didn't have to be God. And you make it God because you don't have the answer. You don't know what happened before the Big Bang, so you say God. But isn't it, you know, easier to just say, I don't know, and not put in an answer, which is ask another question, well, oh, God, how do you answer the? How do you talk about that? What's the proof for God? And then you would go, well, I don't know. It's just because it has to be.
Yeah, well, where else did we come from if it wasn't God? But
exactly.
You're answering a question with another question.
And so, at that point, it was almost instantaneous for me. I said, okay, fine. I don't believe in God anymore. I'm an agnostic. I know I'm not an atheist because atheists eat babies. And he told me then that that actually meant that I was an atheist. He showed me that if I am without God belief, then I'm an atheist and I can be an agnostic at the same time. And it took me, that one took me a little longer because that one was crushing. That was like, wow, my mom really fucked me up on that point. And I had to do a little bit of research on that. It took me about 3 hours. And then I came back and was like, okay, you're right.
Yeah.
And all it took was one person to give me the information and for me to cross-check it and go, wow, he's right. And a lot of people to shame because I've given this same batch of information over and over and over again to people, to you tonight, right now, and you might not accept the evidence. And that's going to say something about your inability to think critically and to think outside the box and to think freely. And it shows something about my ability to come to a conclusion that's completely different than everything I've been taught my entire life because it's valid and accurate and it can be proven.
Yeah. If if conclusive evidence of the existence of some form of supernatural being was presented to us and verifiable, then yeah, I think that we would all believe it. But the fact of the matter is that the particular God of the three major monotheistic religions cannot possibly exist. He's logically impossible. Could there be some other kind of thing out there? Maybe. Maybe we don't know. And if that thing chooses to reveal itself to us in such a way that you can't deny its existence, just like I can't deny the existence of the sun and the moon, then, yeah, sure. Brian's kind of busy right now, but I would say
typing
that he
him.
Agrees.
I'm typing to him right in the chat room. I'm saying the same thing. I completely agree. In fact, I'm about to give you a quote because I think it's important for you to understand the difference. Yes, we leave open the possibility that there's some sort of thing that would have created us, and we would refer to that as God. Here, I wanted you to see this quote that I keep in one of my quote archives here. I think that is to give you an idea of how sure we are. We're basically so sure that the Christian God doesn't exist that we would liken belief in the Christian God to literal belief in the tooth fairy, pink unicorns, flying sharks, flying spaghetti monsters, unicorns that live on the moon, little blue trolls that live inside your head and actually make your brain work by using a little treadmill.
Yeah.
That is how sure we are that your God doesn't exist.
Yeah,
positive. I would bet my life on it right now. In fact, if your God exists, go ahead and strike me dead right now.
Or do something.
He's
not going to prove himself
God,
to you like that, because then it wouldn't require
I'll tell you
faith.
What, God could come in the chat room.
Yeah.
And we would all feel it, know it. It would be obvious.
That one clip on Nightline was funny. Like, oh, that must be God calling us right now. Oh, nope, phone's not ringing. That was funny. Yeah. But, okay, where's that? Sam. As far as believing people about, like, you know, losing your homework or, something like that, that has nothing to do with, like, the state of your, like, supposedly eternal soul. Losing your homework and going to hell to be burned and tortured for all of eternity are just a little bit different. Losing your homework isn't something that influences your entire worldview. The way that you operate in society, the way that you operate among other people, you might be afraid of losing your homework, but not as afraid as you would be of going to hell and burning for all of eternity. Because if your teacher would do that to you, that would probably be crazy.
Speaking of homework, I just wanted to point out, it's going to be pretty hard for you to write an honest paper here and not piss off your teacher. You might have wanted to pick, atheist at large to interview, you know? You would have had something there. Infidel guy. Interview him.
Why deal with religion if it does so much good?
He'll say atheism is
a
belief in God could exist.
Yeah, well. Okay,
first
of all.
Science is fake. And then abortion could be ruled out constitutionally.
Yeah. Okay, first of all, I would claim that the only good that religion does, as far as the individual goes, is it makes you feel more comfortable with the fact that you are going to die. The good that religion does, across the world, like humanitarian projects, is not good at all. And as a matter of fact, is probably harmful. Okay, like, it's great. You want to go feed starving people? Go feed starving people. Don't make them read the fucking Bible first. Do it because you want to help them. Do the things that will help them. And if they ask you why you do it, then you can talk about how much you love Jesus Christ. But literally, people don't understand how these missionary organizations work. Like, if you don't accept their God or agree to go to, like, their weekly services, they will deny you food. They will deny you care. Their entire purpose is evangelism, and it's only masked in humanitarianism, and it pisses me the fuck off. And you can quote me on that.
Right. They hide behind these guys like they're all moral, but they do everything they do is just so they can get their asses in heaven. That's the opposite of moral. You become a robot at that point. You're following instructions on how to get somewhere and make yourself feel better.
Yeah, and not to mention the harm that religion does, both to societies and individuals. Look around the world, not only today, but in the past, and see how many people have died in wars or in persecutions because of religion and no other matter. You know, look around the world and see how much conflict is based on religious difference, and then come back and tell me that it does good.
Sam's, definitely, if you want to send us your paper, we'll be glad to correct anything that is an inaccurate misrepresentation of us.
That's a double negative, inaccurate misrepresentation.
Oh, yeah.
That would actually mean accurate.
I am not, Sam, despite the name, I am not any part owner of this board whatsoever, so do not put me in there just because I share the same name as Brian and I helped come up with the name. That's the extent of it. I am just a fan and a supporter, and that's it.
Sam's, I just wanted to interrupt Brian there and tell you. Actually, Sam's, just so you know, he's not willing to admit it right now, but he's actually a famous computer engineer, and I am merely a set of holograms that he is orchestrating from his computer right now. Along with that and his $6 million contribution, he effectively is the entire reason that the Rational Response Squad exists. So, I wouldn't write that in there because that's like crazy, you know, and your teacher's not going to believe it. But, I mean, really, I'm just, in fact, you know, right now, basically, I'm just saying the words that are coming out of Brian's, you know, hologram machine.
Yeah. He's an interesting kind of hologram, though, because you can actually touch him. I mean, he's a very complex.
That's why he named me Brian. No, he's not really a computer engineer. He's really a sit at home. Atheist.
I'm a sit at home dumbass, is what I am.
I was trying not to go there.
Yeah, no, I'm a sapient bot, though. Okay, so, like, Brian's not really a hologram, but I am a robot created by Brian.
Now, she's a robot created by me, and
yeah.
I'm just a hologram.
I'm the sapient bot. Also known as the girl, his wife.
Colleague known as.
That red-headed bitch with the big tits. And Kelly Huguerack.
Right, Kelly Huguerack.
The best one is commonly known as that girl.
Commonly known as that girl, that woman, the female.
We're making jokes right now, Sam's, obviously, but we're referring to the fact that it seems like nobody can ever get Kelly's name right or that they have no interest in getting her name right.
They don't even know my name. They know everybody else's name. Although I was impressed the other day because somebody got my name right and got your name wrong.
Yeah, I'm Michael Sapien
like,
or something like that.
Wow!
I'm Mike Sapien. Yeah, I'm Mike Sapien and Kelly.
It was amazing. It was like a victory. Yeah. Do we have any professions? Yeah. we have professions.
Yeah, no, yeah. We we do this full time pretty much. Basically. Rook and Kelly have part time jobs. Rock hard on, dude.
Yeah, yeah. I thought he forgot all about me until I saw
he posted
a
it again the other day.
Comment from him. I thought he was done with me. He actually said in the chat room one night like that he said to somebody else, like, hey, if I can get over Kelly, so can you. So I figured he just, you know, he was done with me. He must be praying to somebody else for his boners now.
Nobody ever want a girl doing that.
I don't think that winning a girl was his. I don't think that was his intent.
I don't
think
he's
smart
enough
to know that. Yeah.
I think he kind
some
of
other weird
was
just
trying
to
be
funny.
Funny.
Yeah. It was just kind of weird.
We're the bomb. Aw, shit.
We're the bomb diggity, yo. Straight out of a Christian's mouth.
Bomb diggity dog.
We're going to quote that. We're going to add that to our long list. Well, Sable Chicken said one the other day, too. You guys are like some... What did she say? You guys are like some... It's at rationalresponders.com/Sable Chicken.
I don't know. I actually can't understand the words that come out of her mouth. Because, like, you know, they just scramble themselves in my brain before I can process them, because otherwise it would just explode.
Yeah, we'll take that one. Thanks, guys. You're the bomb. Signed, a Christian student. And we'll add it to the, here it is. This is it.
All right, well, okay, Sam.
Completely out of context quotes, they're called.
We'll save this file and send it to you. It's going to be pretty big. But
no, we can make the sound quality poor, because he doesn't really need good sound quality just to get the quotes.
Well, and we can send it
and
to
we'll put
you.
It, no, we'll put it online.
Oh, okay. We're gonna upload it to our site and then we will send you the link. Okay. And what do I say when somebody sneezes? Nothing, because saying anything is stupid. I refuse to obey cultural tradition that has no purpose.
Rook says Gesundheit to us, and I told him a while ago.
You.
Yeah, I told him a while ago. Right, exactly. Fuck you.
Yeah, that would be great. If everybody just starts doing that, every time somebody sneezes, just say, fuck you.
Well, when Rook tells me Gesundheit, my response is, fuck you. And I told him that I would say, fuck you. Originally, I said I was going to punch him in the face every time he said Gesundheit to me. And now I just say, fuck you instead. So he says Gesundheit, and then I say, fuck you, and he laughs because he realizes that he instinctively said Gesundheit.
Yeah, well, we will... Probably, we'll definitely have it up on the site before tomorrow evening, because we're leaving for a conference. But, you know, whatever, it'll be up there. So hopefully, you know, you present our arguments accurately. And if your teacher has any interest in talking to us, you know where to find us.
No, it doesn't work if you say fuck you when somebody sneezes. You say fuck you to them if they... say God bless you, or you don't say fuck you to somebody when they sneeze. That's retarded. How inconsiderate. But if somebody says God bless you to you and they disrespect you like that, you should fucking turn around and say fuck you.
Yeah, no, see, I like to say,
or just say no thanks, I'm good.
Yeah, I don't need that.
Or you can say what is a blessing? Where do they come from?
I like to kind of sometimes say like Zeus bless you. Or, like, you know, like something absurd like that. Because
Dipsy,
people are like, huh?
If somebody just said bless you, my instinctive reaction would just say no.
Yeah, but what is a blessing? Like, how can you, like...
Yeah, what do they...
Yeah,
what
bless
is that?
You? Who's blessing me? Like, if you just say bless you and just leave out the God, you're still assuming that there's something out there that can bless you. You know? I don't know. It's just dumb. If somebody that you don't like sneezes, should you say, you know, God curse you? God damn you? I mean, it's retarded. I just disagree with, like, following along with just cultural traditions for no reason. All right, I'm going to stop recording now because it's going to...